It's time to turn the spotlight on local, national, and international affairs, plus some goss and scandal. And here's the man that does that so well, Mitchell Dye.
Good morning, I'm back. It's great to be back for 2019 on 94.7 The Pulse after taking a month off. And a big thanks to Trish for a great job on the breakfast program. It's a huge program to get started with 2019. But first of all, a bit of a traffic alert for people. In Curlewis, there's been a very serious collision on Grub Road. And Grub Road is now closed in both directions. There is an ambulance Victoria chopper on the way. So avoid Grub Road. The actual closure is between Anderson's Road and Belcher's Road. So if you're in that area, just look out because they've closed it in both directions. And I presume that the chopper has to actually come in and land, and it's quite a process. I got stuck in one of those situations a while back on the road to Ballarat. And I remember they closed the highway in both directions and the helicopter had to come in. It was quite a delay. All right, well, let's get straight into the issues of the day. And only one person can have the title of being the first guest on the program for 2019. And that title goes to Tom Rowe. Tom, welcome back. Nice to see you.
Great to be back, Mitchell. What an honour. First session of 2019.
And you're looking rejuvenated and refreshed and full of beans.
A bit like you, Mitchell. In theory, 4 weeks off. It's gone very quickly, though.
I know. It's amazing, isn't it? And you just spent the time locally with family and all that
I did. We live at Bowen Heads and I didn't move. So we're very, very happy to be there over the summer break.
It seemed like Bowen Heads got quite busy at times over the break. Did you notice a lot of tourists coming in?
Well, for year on year, because we've been living there for nearly 18 years now. So it's been busier every year. That's no change this year, but we did have some very good traffic management controls put in place this year with some manned, one manned intersection, Lollipop People, and
yeah,
they did a great
job.
They did worked very well, I think.
It's a good idea. It's something that could perhaps be expanded because the coastal town's not really designed to build or to deal with the influx of traffic that they have at this time, and it can actually get quite dangerous when the intersections that are only designed to have a very small number of cars suddenly become all log jammed and, you know, you can't move.
Log jammed, absolutely, and driver frustration as well. So, look, it was a good compromise. I believe they were quite well paid. I heard up to $60 an hour, which is not a bad rate. But some very, very hot days. These guys were sitting or standing in the sun directing people. So they were very personable, very friendly. There was one lady, a Scottish lady, could barely understand her accent. She was very Scottish, but she did a phenomenal job.
I haven't heard it the day on the green. To get out of the car park there, I'm told, there was about 45 minutes when no cars were moving and perhaps better traffic management could have been deployed there.
Look, indeed. But you need to be responsive, and it's good when government people, whether it's local government or whatever, to respond and create sort of niche solutions to some local problems. That's a good way to go about it.
So 2019, what sort of year do you think it's going to be?
Well, it's going to be fractious, I think. We've got some unsettled parts of the economy, particularly in the southeast with our building and housing industry. There are some different news stories out there at the moment. If you look even at the Addy throughout last week, they were talking about how strong the Geelong market is. And in terms of construction activity, it is very, very strong because there's a lag effect. We sell stuff in terms of land, that's the industry, and then the builders come along and start building. So you get this great backlog of building activity. So there's a lot of building activity, very good for employment, but at the same time, sales of new land is right down. December on December, that is December 2017 compared to December 2018, sales volumes are down 70%. At the same time, our construction numbers are going through the roof. So that construction cycle will peak, if something else doesn't give, as the volumes of sales that have dropped begin to feed through into the marketplace. And that caused disturbances all through our domestic consumption markets, and that's not so good. So there is a bit of, there's some differing news stories out there. I think retail, we'll have to wait for those retail numbers over summer to come through and see whether it's a bit weak. We've obviously got a federal election coming up. That's going to disturb things as well. Fractious, fragmented, I think, different news stories out there, unknown.
Do you think people are holding off making big decisions because of the federal election? There could be some changes in key policy settings if, for example, Labor forms government, changes to negative gearing, etc.
I think no doubt it has some effect. I think people read the media, and with the media's got a sort of a downward trend to it and talking the economy down and talking to concerns, that can hold people back, and then it feeds on itself, of course, and it sort of snowballs. We don't want that. There's a lot of great indicators out there. Employment is really strong. The business cycle is strong. So lots of great indicators out there. We don't want to destroy confidence at the moment, but there are some issues.
I get the impression that it might have been quite a positive Christmas period. I think things are a little bit more optimistic than perhaps what they might have been in previous years, but that's just a hunch.
I haven't seen some of the numbers. I know in our development industry there are some issues emerging. We haven't seen price reduction yet, but people are looking for price reduction. But at the same time, we look at all of our website traffic and it's never been as strong. So we've got active demand and we've got the sort of latent or underlying demand. There's still very strong underlying demand. People need to go to places, but because they've got a feel of deflation around the corner, they stop acting. And this can feed on itself, but we've got strong population growth still, lots of people coming to our region and our state. And lots of employment going on as well. So lots of good indicators as well.
So it'll be a big year for federal politics with an election coming up perhaps in March or maybe May. I think they're going to release the budget, it seems, and announce that they've turned a budget surplus and then kind of go straight to an election after that. That's what it feels like.
That's certainly what it feels like. I think Josh Frydenberg there was on the radio this morning with, I think John Fain's back on. I didn't hear John's voice. No, I did. It's not true. John's back on the radio this morning.
I think they're all back now.
Yeah, that's true.
All the great people.
So Josh was selling the story this morning, I'm sure, as Treasurer as well, and talking to the issue of Kelly O'Dwyer resigning and female politics in the Liberal Party. I think it's a May election. They'll go to getting their budget out there, presenting the strongest possible case, and then go in May.
It'll be interesting to see what happens, but things are not looking too great at the moment. I mean, Kelly O'Dwyer stood down. However, when you look at the chances of her retaining her seat, it's probably at an all-time low. And it's pretty significant given the history of that seat, given that it's had two former Liberal Prime Ministers.
Indeed. So what a change that'll be. I think she holds it by 8%, but there was a big swing last time. And obviously with the state political result of last year, it's not looking great for holding that seat. It's going to be a hell of a contest. And obviously without the incumbency of Kelly being there, it makes it harder again.
He's just announced, John Fain, you just mentioned him, he's just announced he's retiring. So there you go.
Wow, that's it. That is a change.
30
hard,
years.
Very hard to replace John.
Yeah, well, he's one of a kind, isn't he?
Indeed. I've listened to a lot of his voice over the years, being a commuter to Melbourne. I listen to you, of course, Mitchell, but I do listen to John as well.
It's amazing when you have these people, but then over the summer break, you hear all the people that are sort of the next people in line for some of these positions on the different radio stations, the fill-in people. It's been interesting to hear who they've been.
Very hard to fill in for John. Those who listen to used to listening to him on the radio and the way he carries himself and his ability to interrogate people, he certainly gets my blood pressure going. I disagree with him many times, but I think he's a very good host and a way of peeling layers back to get to the core issue.
No doubt about that. Absolutely. So it'll be an interesting year. As you said, Higgins very much potentially in doubt. I know there's also been some redistributions over the years that have kind of changed some of the demographics around it. But then also locally, for example, Corangamite. I mean, Sarah Henderson, I know, is pushing. She's working very, very hard. But I've got a feeling that the tide might be turning against her.
As I think I've said on radio beforehand, Sarah's a friend. She was at my place on the weekend. We had a bit of a party on the weekend, and Sarah was over there then. And she and I got on very well socially. We do have some very strong policy differences in the weighting of policies, so yep. We have a good bounty from time to time on the political front. She is working very hard, but a hell of a contest coming up, and the weight of numbers and the movement against the blue side, I think, will be overwhelming. She'll fight, though. She's an absolute street fighter. She's very smart. She's very hardworking. She'll give it every bit of, you know, ounce of energy that she's got to try to hold the seat. But a very tough kick in front of her, I think.
And we've got her Labour opponent on the program tomorrow.
So see what Libby's got to say, yes.
It'll be very interesting to hear about what her policy priorities are for 2019 and where they think the key issues are going to be. But at the moment...
Winning, I think, is the only thing to consider about.
Well, that's
about
right. I mean, I think it's an interesting point because it feels like Labour is perhaps not getting as much scrutiny as they perhaps otherwise would because of some of the issues in the Liberal Party. But that said, there was a lot of talk when Tony Abbott was opposition leader that he wasn't subject to the same scrutiny because of the change in leadership from Rudd to Gillard and all that sort of thing.
Yeah, and look, indeed. One of the things that I have heard come through regularly is in the Corangamite area, for example, but it's more broadly, is a lot of my people are sort of on the centre-right, not surprisingly, people I associate with.
Yep.
I have a range of friends, but yes, certainly on the centre-right. Many would be traditional Liberal voters, but think about it as well. They constantly say, I don't know who I'm going to vote for this time. I'm really, really struggling because the Liberal Party doesn't represent what I'm about. And this is a problem for the party. It's a problem for me personally as well. I struggle with it greatly, and I'm going to struggle with this federal election as well.
Where do you feel like they're not championing the causes that you're passionate about?
Well, for me, look, I'm as we've discussed on your program a number of times, I'm very Victorian focused. I'm a big believer in federation. I don't believe either the blue side or the red side federally are doing the right thing by federation, the way we're meant to operate, yep. and what our constitution is meant to afford all of us. So I'm dead against that. And that's where I have a huge difference of opinion with very many federal politicians. I think the Liberal Party made a horrendous mistake throughout last year via its administrative committee, whoever these faceless people are, because I really don't know who they are, where they've taken away, I think, the power of the Board of Membership to choose its candidates. And when they unilaterally revoked any ability for even sitting members like the likes of Kevin Andrews to be challenged by others, which is the way our system in Victoria is meant to work, I think that was a disgraceful action and a very big mistake, and it's pissed off a lot of people in the party.
Interesting times ahead. We'll have to wait and see what the overall results are. But I'm looking forward to interviewing all the candidates as we did with the state elections. It's always an exciting time, and no doubt we'll be having the same forums that we've had in the past in the Pulse foyer. I know the Corangamite one for 2016 was always going to be an interesting one, and it turned out to be very interesting with Libby and Sarah, so I can't wait to see what it's like this time around.
Fireworks, I think.
Fireworks.
Yes.
Now, locally, I'm just interested in the consultation going on about parking in the CBD, and I saw that Councillor Eddie Contell put up a sign saying, if you want free parking in the CBD, fill out this online survey. I've gone to the survey. I've had a look at it. There was one question in particular that interested me, and that was, should we limit the number of parks in the CBD with new developments to discourage private car ownership? Which I thought was quite an interesting comment or an interesting thought. Because you build these new developments, and one of the common complaints that I hear from people is that once the development goes in, there's no room to park because there's inadequate parking. People park on the street. And I don't know if it's going to work if you take away car spaces, if that discourages car ownership, or if it just really annoys people and agitates people. And of course, in Geelong, we're not exactly spoiled for choice when it comes to transport options. Public transport is limited. Cycling, they're working on that. But, I mean, a lot of the places you have to go are quite far away in distance. So I'm not sure. But I'm just wondering what your thoughts are.
Well, no, I think limiting car parking broadly is going to be a problem. I think people, we as a Geelong community, sometimes get a little bit ahead of ourselves. We're very keen to grow our CBD area, our revitalisation of the CBD. I totally get that. What we forget is that we're still quite a small city. We can't, relating ourselves back to Melbourne, I think we learn always from Melbourne's mistakes and what it's done well. But I also think we need to understand that we're very much a smaller place. We've got a lot of public infrastructure capacity we need to deliver to the region. And before we start making wholesale changes to like in the way that we work at the moment with our car parking support, that we've got proper alternatives to accommodate a car parking change. So I think we need to be very careful there, not jump too quickly into what a major city would ordinarily do to try to handle their traffic constraints. At the same time, for goodness sake, learn from other people's mistakes and try and lead it rather than follow mistakes, find the solutions first.
And I was talking to another councillor as well, and they said that behind the scenes, the people that are advising the councillors, they seem to be quite pro-encouraging alternative forms of transport. Which so their fear is if they make free CBD parking a reality, then it will discourage people from taking the bus or riding a bike or whatever.
Yeah, but you need to have the alternative available, and I just don't think there is.
Problem.
The bus networks are terrible, Mike. Yep. We have to drive our kids around all over the place because the bus networks just don't do the job properly. They don't connect with rail. You know, kids are at the rail station, you come and pick me up because there's no bus here. They don't run through the Bellarine properly. They go through woody, weird routes. There's no crossover. It just doesn't work at the moment. So we've got a long, long way to go building up our public transport capacity and choice. Now, just back to parking in the CBD, one of the things, the discussion I did have with Cathy Alexander when she was chief administrator was the introduction of these sensors to flag the parking guys to come along and, you know, hit you for a ticket, of course. But I've always been keen, rather than looking to fine people, why don't you look to create surge pricing? And so rather than, for example, fining people, you look to say, look, come into the city in the early hours or when there's a low demand side, you'll get a discounted parking or a zero fee car parking. And by using your smartphones, which not all of us have, but so many of us have your account, and you might find zero cost parking is affordable and doable and encourages the right sort of demand for the CBD to encourage a broader spectrum of activity rather than having these concentrated hot spells of demand. And I think that would be a really smart way to do it. Equally, in hot times when there's great demand, increase the pricing.
I think that's a great idea. In Melbourne, I had to go and pick up something from a shop, and it seemed to be easiest just to go in there and park in the street because I was only going to be in and out of this particular shop. And I was able to fire up the app, pay for the parking on the app, which I try and avoid paying for parking if at all possible.
Of course.
Because I don't like giving money to councils if I don't have to. But in this occasion in Melbourne, you can't find free parking. So I paid for it in the app, and it works so well because you just hit the start button on the app, you go and buy whatever, and then you come back, and then you hit stop, and the parking's paid for, and it gives you reminders if you stay too long. Whereas here, you've got to sort of go and get a ticket, work out how long you might be staying, and then rush back to the car. And then the street traders complain that people aren't stopping to look at their shops because they're probably running back to make sure that they don't get a fine.
Indeed. So it's a long way to go yet. I think what, you know, City of Port Phillip does or City of Melbourne does or something, they're all good things. So we've got some learns to do there. But I also think the surge pricing model with this electronic sensors in the spaces themselves is also the way to go. And we can flip it around rather than being a penalty type thing, there's also a reward. Reward for coming in, reward for changing car parking, reward for coming in at times when there's low demand.
And what I love about that as well is that you could make parking free, but then the car parks that are free could become paid car parks if it becomes absolutely flat chat.
Absolutely. Exactly right.
I think that's
Mitchell.
An excellent idea. I think that that is something that could be championed.
So that would be my consultation back to council as part of this process. I have been a bit jaundiced by the way council does approach its consultation. I think that's a frustration. I think council needs to be much better at coming back to people who make the effort to make submissions and saying we really value and we are going to really listen to what you've got to say.
But people should go on and do that survey, I think.
At the very least, yes. They do need it. Look, they
have
do
you
look
seen
at
that
it.
Survey?
I have had a very quick look at it, Mitchell, but that's as far as I've gone. So
I think it's on the council's website, or if you go to some of the council of Facebook pages, they are linking to it because they want people to support whatever their particular platform is. Well, Tom, thank you very much for being on the program. It's been great to catch up. Looking forward to doing it all again next month, but good to have you back on for 2019.
Indeed, looking forward to a very big year, Mitchell.
Fantastic. Thank you very much, Tom Rowe there.
Mitchell's Front Page with Mitchell Dye. Mondays and Tuesdays from 9 till 11 on 94.7 The Pulse.